And of course, I'm going to open up the campfire hotline. Those of you who have stories or have been told stories that you've just never forgotten, that those stories that just curl you, that chill you, a campfire story. Just think of it. The fire's crackling, the marshmallows are sizzling, and it's kind of scary out. And you hear that little owl hooting in the background with a full moon. That's a campfire story. That number, 818-817-0021. That's 818-817-0021. Here's the weekend. As you know, Art Bell has taken several weekends off starting this weekend. We'll have a classic Art Bell show on Saturday. Ian Punnett, of course, will have his Coast to Coast Live program on, as usual, 6 p.m. Pacific time, and he will be on this Saturday. I will be on for you live on Sunday of this week, and then as we get into next week, I'll give you the schedule for that and then the schedule after that as well. A couple more weeks for me here in St. Louis. I'm here because my son is going to get married very shortly, and then I'll be packing up and going back to Los Angeles, so I'll update you on that trip as well. But when we come right back now, 2 hours of open lines. I'm George Norrie. This is Coast to Coast AM. Okay, welcome back. Let's go right to the phones west of the Rockies. You're up with us on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
How you doing this morning, George?
I'm doing fine. Thank you.
Yeah. This is Michael. I'm over here in North Carolina.
Okay, Michael.
I drive a truck for a living. I've been listening to you off and on, God, for I can't even remember how long. But I was coming back to California one night when back in 97, Hellbop was flying over. And it's cold. God, I said about this time in the morning, and just nowhere. I was looking out the window and everything, and I looked back next jump seat, and my father was sitting there. He passed away in 93. And it just freaked me out in Spanish, which he could not speak because he's German, and I could not understand Spanish. Told me to get off the road. And this shook me up a little bit, and I looked out the road and looked back, and he was gone. Well, I got off the road at the next possible place that I could pull off, got out, stretched my legs, got my mind back about me and everything because it messed me up pretty bad.
Oh, yeah.
And got back in the truck and turned my radio back on, my CB radio back on, and there was chatter about a driver going the wrong way on the highway. Well, just right after that, a Greyhound bus had went flying by me, and I don't know why, but I noticed looking over at it, and there was nobody on the bus except for the driver. And it couldn't have been more than about 5, 10, 15 minutes after that. They started hollering on the radio that bus had hit that car going the wrong way head on.
Oh, my God.
And if I hadn't gotten off the road, I honestly believe it would have been me that hit that vehicle.
Yep. Could have been.
And it's to this day, I still think about that. And I still feel like he's standing behind me in the sleeper watching over behind me sometimes. So, it still freaks me out.
Yeah. Somebody's taking care of you.
Oh, yeah. I'm glad he is.
Keep him along for the ride.
Oh, yeah. He drove for 30 years, so evidently he knew what he was talking about. So I'm not going to complain, you know?
No, not at all. Hey, thanks for the call.
All right, man. You have a good one.
Appreciate it. In St. Louis, the main highway out here is called 4064. And today, traffic on the westbound portion of this highway was shut down. All these cars are shut down, and I'm approaching it. And I'm heading eastbound, so I'm all right. I'm going straight, but I'm saying, my gosh, why is everybody stopped way down there? As I get closer, I can see two or three police cars. Lights are flashing. A car pulled over on the side of the road facing the traffic. Obviously, this person had come down the wrong way on the entrance ramp. You know, the way that you go off, he was coming down, and he was going right toward traffic. Well, they got him somehow. They stopped him, and the traffic was just snail's pace. I mean, it was hardly moving at all, but they got him, and man, were they lucky. And I'm telling you, can you imagine the eyes on the person or the people in those two front cars that see this guy coming that way, the wrong way on a freeway? That's got to be frightening. Wild Card Line, welcome to Coast to Coast. You're on the air. Hi there. Well, you are gone. Let's go to our next wild card line. Hi there. Welcome to the show.
Good evening.
Hi.
How you doing? My name is John.
Yeah, John.
I'm a long-haul trucker by trade. About 2 months ago, me and my wife was camping up around Swimmer's Delight in Northern California. And it was a heavily wooded area. My wife went inside the sleeper for the evening, and it must have been around 10 or 11 a.m. or p.m., and it was pretty bright outside. And I was stoking up the campfire when I heard a little noise coming from behind one of the redwood trees. I thought maybe it was a dog or something. And from out from behind this redwood tree came a little three-foot man. And the only reason I'm calling tonight is to see if maybe one of your listeners have had such an experience, because it was the most frightening thing I've ever seen. It's going to sound kind of ridiculous, but I could have sworn the darn thing was growling at me as it was running off. And it wasn't happy that I was there.
Was he clothed, or did he look like a little animal guy?
It's funny you should ask that. It had some kind of a brown outfit on, and long hair. And at first, I thought my eyes were playing tricks on me. And the only reason I never told my wife is because I've been clean and sober now for about 6 years, and I didn't want her to worry about me and think maybe I was seeing things.
Yeah, or she'd think you were right back again, huh?
That's right, because people sometimes will have detox, and they will see things. And I don't drink or do drugs, but I saw this creature with my own two eyes, and like I said before, it was frightening.
How close did it get to you?
It was about 30 feet away.
Well, all right, that's pretty close. So, and you're sure it wasn't like a little monkey that might have gotten loose from someplace or anything like that?
Well, the reason why I'm sure it wasn't a monkey is because it had long blonde hair, and like I said, it wasn't happy I was there. And the funny thing is the crickets that night were really loud, and they stopped, and right before it stepped out from behind the redwood tree.
Now, did it have total human features?
Absolute total human features. I thought maybe it was some kind of a little man trying to play a trick on me. But I know it wasn't that. And I wanted to see if maybe any of your listeners have seen anything like that. Or
okay, well, now, his features look normal, or did he look deformed or anything like that?
It had really long hair, long, twisty hair. And
What about his face?
It wasn't happy. When I made eye contact with the eyeballs, it wasn't happy to see me at that point.
I mean, did he have a beard and things like that, or you're just...
Yeah, complete hair covering his whole face.
Okay, so he looked like a little mountain man, I guess.
A little mountain man, almost.
Okay, and his uniform, you said you described it as being brownish. Did it look like a uniform, like clothes or an outfit that you would see people wear, or did it look more like a spacesuit?
It basically looked like something that he was living in, coming from the earth. It was brown, like a rawhide almost.
Like maybe an animal skin or something
like that. Like maybe an animal skin, and it sounds crazy. I know it does, but...
Okay, I wonder if it's possible for you... This is incredible. Is it possible for you to make that kind of sound that he made when he was coming from behind the tree?
You know, I was telling my friend about this, and I was telling him it sounded like a raccoon that was eating something. I don't know if you ever heard what a raccoon sounds like when it makes kind of a snarl noise, but it was an animal noise that it made.
Okay, and so he comes out of this tree, stares at you for a little bit.
Stares at me for not long at all.
And then runs. Does he run away or walk away?
It ran away, because it was almost like after the crickets had stopped, I looked up because I heard a branch crack, and it stepped from behind the redwood tree like it had been spotted. Turned around and started running, but right as it was turning, it made a growling noise.
Would you have tried to capture him if
he
came?
Absolutely not. I got so frightened it was ridiculous. I have a .45 we keep.
What scared you so much? I mean, the creature's
growling
only...
noise scared me probably the most.
All right, and because it was 3 feet tall and was a human looking person.
That's to say the least. You know, I'm just wondering if I was seeing things. Or I've heard of people having some kind of apparitions before, but I've never seen human being that's 3 feet tall. After this happened, I've been looking on the internet, and I found one of the smallest people, I guess, was like 4 feet tall or something like that.
Well, but Tom Thumb was small. You know, Tom Thumb was with P.T. Barnum. But I got to tell you, how'd you even get to sleep that night?
I didn't.
I don't blame you.
Basically, I didn't sleep at all last night, or that night it happened. And
you just let the wife sleep it, and you just stayed awake.
Mm-hmm. And I haven't said a word to her about it. But I'm hoping maybe one of your callers have had something like that happen.
Okay, well, we'll find out. Now, I've had a couple stories. I had a story once almost about a year ago, a little man story like that. But this creature showed up behind the guy's car in his driveway, and then it just like disappeared, almost like it floated into another dimension.
Well, it didn't make any noise as it was running. I noticed that after that initial first crack, it didn't make any noise as it was running. And I don't know if that was because my heart was beating so fast or what. And it was a really intense growling noise. As a matter of fact, when I went inside, I almost wanted to ask my wife if she heard that, but she was already asleep, thank God.
But he had no weapons in his hand or nothing like that?
No weapons in his hand, but it was a very aggravated little animal. But yeah. It wasn't an animal. Like I said, it was a little man.
Whatever it was, it didn't want you around in his forest.
Right.
That's for sure.
You know, we believe in kind of Bigfoot. Sometimes we go up to see if we can find Bigfoot. And this area of Northern California is a quite heavily wooded area. And it's just kind of interesting that a little guy like this would be up there running around.
Yeah, we're going to have to call this Littlefoot now. Now we have another creature to look for, huh?
I actually heard a story about some people finding a bunch of little people up in a cave somewhere recently that had been years.
And where was that? In the United States?
I'm not sure if it was the United States or wherever, but it kind of got hush-hush after it first came out. The story did.
Huh, that's interesting. Okay, well, thanks for your story. And if anybody else has anything similarly to that, we'll have them check in with us. Let's go to our wild card line. Welcome to Coast. You're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hello.
Yeah, hi.
I'm sorry. I didn't know it was my turn.
It's your turn. You don't have to apologize.
Oh, George, you're so sweet. And I'm Emily, and I'm over in Hawaii on the Big Island. And I just wanted to share with you something that happened to my son and I when he was 6 years old. He's 25 now.
Okay, a long time ago then.
Yeah, it was, but it doesn't seem like it. He was... I went to school, pick him up. At that time, he was in public school, but later I homeschooled him. But anyway, I pulled up in the driveway, and I put the car in neutral. Well, the car slipped out, and I didn't know it. And it wheeled around, and he jumps out of the back seat, jumps out of the car, and the car ran over him. And he was, like I said, 6 years old, little guy. And I turn around, I look, see him. He's standing in the, he gets up, he reaches for me in the highway. And then he goes, and I ran on the highway. I picked him up, and he seemed to be dying on me. I ran to the yard, laid him on the ground, and I didn't know how to do CPR. But I started doing everything I could, you know. But the more I did, the further he went. And I was trying to push and blow on in his mouth, and I closed his nose and blew, and I could hear the rumbling and all. And he went further and further away. Finally, he was gone. There was no heartbeat. There was nothing. And so he just stayed gone. But I wouldn't give up because he's my only child. And I just kept on. Pick him up. I'd shake him. I'd do everything I could. I'd hold him. I'd blow. I'd rub him. I'd scream and yell and holler and do everything that you could think of to try to get your child back.
Oh, sure. My God. Yeah. Horrible.
So he never did come back. And so 45 minutes later, I was so exhausted and so weak and so lost and so afraid. I laid him on the ground. I looked up to the sky, and I screamed with every bit of energy in my heart and soul and as loud as I could. And I just said, God, don't take my baby. Please don't take my baby. And I was screaming, and about that time I said, give me my baby back. And his body kind of had a slight jerk, and I picked him up, and this guy had come along on a tractor. We went to the hospital, and the car ran over his kidneys. So I thought for sure that he would have, and at that time he was undiagnosed hemophilia.
Yeah.
So I thought, sure, there's going to be blood. And there was no blood. And when there was no blood, I just was, oh, man, I fell on my knees. I was great. You know, I was just so happy that he was alive and there wasn't any blood. So about 6 weeks later, we were home, and he said, you know, Mommy, he said, when you was giving me mouth to mouth, I was up above you looking down at you giving me mouth to mouth. And I thought, wow. And at this time, this was 86. And I don't think that I had ever known of any talk or anything about out-of-body experiences at that time.
Well, it was going on, but it really wasn't publicized that much.
Right. And yeah, but it had been happening. Especially for a little boy. And I don't remember us ever.
Well, now, let's hold on a minute, because you jumped ahead a little bit. So for 45 minutes, though, you thought he was dead.
Yeah.
And then the farmer and you go into the hospital. How do they revive him?
No, he came back into his body. And
In the hospital?
Moving.
In the hospital.
So, yeah, I picked him up, and I put him close to my breast, and the guy had come along on a tractor and seen that I was in trouble. And so he took us to the hospital. And then later on, my son was telling me that he was watching me. He said he was up above me.
And little guy's brain was okay? No oxygen problems? Nothing.
No, and he's hemophilia, too.
My God.
And so he bleeds. And so, you know, when he told me that, it kind of, I don't know, I didn't know what to think, but it changed my life, because I asked him, well, what went on, you know? What else?
I bet it changed his, too, didn't it?
Yeah, it did. I took him to see that Dr. Pearl. You had him on your station.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Well, is your son okay now, all these years later?
Yeah, he's here. He's alive. He's well. He saw everything that went on, and I asked him, you know, what else went on, you know. And he told me about the tractor coming. I asked him what road it was coming from, and he said, well, I could see it from far away because I was up high, and every time it come up on top of the hill, I'd see it, you know.
Did he say if anybody told him to go back into your body?
No, he didn't. I was just so powerful, George. I think it had a lot to do with me and my son's experience with he and I being so close, and my, I don't know, my strength, you know.
There's no doubt about that. Hey, thanks for your call. Appreciate it. We're going to continue all night long with open lines. At the end of the program, though, I'm going to play a very short surgery clip for you. Well over a year ago, Tom Danheiser, my line producer, and I went and witnessed and viewed a surgery done by Dr. Roger Lear and a surgeon of a woman who had an implant in her cheek. It was remarkable because every time the surgeon tried to remove the implant from her cheek, that little thing moved. We saw it. It was on like the special X-ray machine that Roger Lear was talking about. This thing would jump away from the tweezers whenever the surgeon was in there trying to grab it. And he was so frustrated because this thing must have gone on for an hour. You're going to listen to the edited version of this. I mean, it was really bizarre. I know Tom and I kept looking at each other going, how can this happen? Anyway, we will be back. We're going to continue with open lines for you all night long. And again, the special line open for you is what I call the Campfire Stories open line. But make them the best you've ever heard. That's 818-817-0021. That's 818-817-0021. Well, time to say hello to all of you listening out there in Radio Land on the nearly 500 now affiliates. We got a few more announcements to make in the next few weeks about some more joining the ever-growing list here, the Coast to Coast family. Hello to all of you, and thanks for your continued support. Streamlink members, hi to you, the Coast Riders, you call yourself. Those of you, of course, listening from the NighthawkZone.com group, hello to you. I think you have now passed, 1,000 members, something like that, headed up by Bad Boy. The Fantastic Forum Pirates, the original chat forum group with the unflappable Spike Mike and his able moderator assistant, Dale O.C. These guys would cover your back, so that's always good to know. How do you folks? Imaginative World, hello, National Radio Club, Sorcery IRC, Yahoo Chats. And the reason why I mention them every week or so, because there's just such a band of great people who get together on almost every night of the week. I'm talking about 7 nights a week to listen to Coast to Coast. And originally, of course, with Art Bell, and they have continued to be Art's staunchest supporters and have been with him through thick and thin. And I thank you for all of that. And some of them have stuck around with me, so I appreciate that as well. And they're just great people. And those of you who are not part of chat rooms, it's a different world out there. And, you know, when a group of people can get together in the wee hours of the morning and not only listen to Coast, but also kick some ideas around and things, you know, it's kind of neat, especially in America, especially nowadays when you need groups of people to hold on to. And so I appreciate it more than you know. More than you know. Hey, by the way, this is a great story. Do you know if Mozart really helps newborn babies? Mozart and other classical music is piped to newborns via headphones in the maternity ward. They actually put little headphones on kids. The doctors believe that the music is the perfect way to keep newborn babies healthy and relaxed after the trauma experience of being born. Science and music always getting together. And talk about weird things. You can fast blast me on this one. If any of you have seen the movie, it's not on the big screen. This is an older one called Welcome to Whoop Whoop. This is the weirdest movie I have ever seen. Why in God's earth did I sit and watch this when I popped it and scanned it on cable? I have no idea. It is the strangest movie I have ever seen. Welcome to Whoop Whoop, it's called. I'll be back in a moment. We'll continue with the rest of your open line calls on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, welcome back. Let's go right to the phones. Let's go to the Campfire Story Hotline. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there. Got one for us?
Hi, how you doing?
I'm doing great. Where are you, by the way?
Well, my name's John. I'm from Sacramento, California.
Okay, John. Good to have you with us.
Thanks. And it's raining out here, and I just thought of a perfect little story I might want to tell. This is about my grandpa about 20 years ago. One night, he received a call from his deceased father, and they had a conversation in his room. And one of the things that my great-grandpa told my grandfather on the phone was to go see Ciata because she's sick. And Ciata was the name of my great-grandpa's sister who was still alive. Okay. And the thing that really freaked my grandpa out was that his dad sounded like he was in a box. And his voice was muffled, and it sounded like he was really far away, like he was making a long-distance phone call,
okay,
so to speak. But he said, he told my grandpa, go see Ciata. Ciata's sick. And my grandpa didn't know what to make of this. You know, he's speaking to his great-grandpa. I mean, he's speaking to his father in Italian who's been dead for like 5 years.
Yeah.
And so the conversation ends. A week later, my aunt, or great aunt, as it was, she died from a heart attack.
Oh, my.
So it was really a strange kind of deal, and we were told this story when we were little, and it was really, I don't know what to say, but it was strange to say the least, and I just thought you might like to hear that.
I've got to tell you, a message from the other side.
Yeah.
It really is. Okay, thanks for that story. Next up, Wildcard Line, your turn. Hi there.
Hello, George.
Hi.
This is Pamela from Ohio, John Teeter's friend. I met John Teeter online and posted questions and answers that I asked him by email. And I've recently met Oliver Williams and wanted to know if he had any questions to ask me.
Well, I think I do, Pamela. Maybe less. Now, when you say John Teeter's friend, did you ever meet him flesh, face to face?
No, I didn't.
You did not. Okay. Mm-mm. So you started, when John then started posting on the internet several years ago, that's when you started chatting with him, I assume?
Right. I had several chats with him online, plus email conversations. He first started posting on the Time Travel Institute on November 2nd, 2000, when he was claiming to be a time traveler. And he said he had pictures to post, and so I offered to post the pictures. When Alfred posted the pictures, I got his email address, and then we started corresponding back and forth with each other.
What was, if you can tell us, sort of, what his email address was? Was it a normal email address?
Oh, sorry, I can't.
Well, I don't.
I wouldn't say anything about that.
Well, I mean, just like, you know, like I'm Yahoo or AOL. What was his domain name there? Is that what they call it?
Yeah, I can't reveal anything like that.
Was it unusual or was it normal?
No, just normal.
It was normal. Okay. What did you think of John Teeter when you were chatting with him?
Well, I didn't actually know what to believe, whether he was a real time traveler or not. But after I saw the pictures, I didn't waste any time asking him questions.
And tell me about the pictures.
The pictures that he wanted me to post online, you mean?
Yeah, the ones you saw.
Well, some of the pictures were of his vehicle that he time traveled in. Some of them were of the machine. He had a lot of pictures of the diagrams, and he had a picture of a symbol that he wore on his uniform.
Okay, now, when he left, Pam, did he say bye to you? Did he say why he had to leave?
He did leave me a letter. He left around March 2nd, 2001, or March 3rd, I believe.
Can you read us the letter?
Oh, I don't have that. I'm sorry.
You don't have the letter that John Teeter gave you?
I mean, I have it, but I didn't print it out to read it online.
It's still on your computer?
I did save all of his letters.
Okay, I mean, give us a paraphrase then. Surely you remember some of these things.
He just said that he had to leave, and he was thankful for all the conversations that we had. And he was surprised. He wasn't really surprised at the way that people were arguing about him. And he just said he would never forget me.
And off he went. And, you know, we talked to a few weeks ago the attorney representing his family. Did mm-hmm. you hear that interview?
Yes, I did.
What'd you think?
Well, I think that Mr. Haber is very sincere and very honest.
I felt that way, too. I mean, mm-hmm. he came across as, you know, I really don't know too much about this, but I've been hired. Now, you said you met Oliver Williams. Oliver, of course, heading up the JohnTeeter.com website.
I've actually just talked to him recently.
Just on the phone? Oh, so you don't know him face-to-face?
No.
Oh, okay. Well, we've done that, too. So, you know, Oliver's been on the show before. Is John ever coming back?
Well, I'll tell you this much. If he does come back, it won't be the same John. Because he can't come back to the same world line.
He can't?
It'll be a different John.
From another time period, you mean?
It'll be a different John from an alternate world line.
Would you like to meet the real John Teeter? The kid who's out there now somewhere, probably in Nebraska?
Sure, I would.
I mean, I don't know where he is, but maybe somehow you can get that information. Okay, Pam. Not a lot of information that's new that we didn't know already. I appreciate your call, though. Let's go to our West of the Rockies line. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, George. Could I talk a little bit about that Hutchison-Whampoa deal?
Sure, absolutely.
And then the magnetic particles. This deal makes me question George Bush's judgment, and I voted for him twice. The Chinese PLA company, Hutchison, also controls the ingress and egress to the Panama Canal, and they have encircled this country with bases. And I believe this violates the Monroe Doctrine, but no one ever talks about that anymore, George. Have you noticed how the Monroe Doctrine, which precludes foreign bases in the Western Hemisphere, has completely disappeared?
Absolutely. You are absolutely right. You know, I got an email today, one negative of the thousands I got over the last one night about this story that we've had on last night. One person said, quit bashing the president. You know, and I read that, and I'm glad you said you voted for him twice.
I think all Republicans are questioning this man, too. I mean, what, has he gone off his rocker?
There's something wrong. I think he's lost control of the presidency. To tell you the truth, I think there's another group of people that are calling the shots here, and he's just going along with the program. This just doesn't make sense.
No, it doesn't. And you might ask him about the Monroe Doctrine next time you have anybody from the administration on. You know those iron magnetic particles that Dr. Lear found?
Yes.
If the person, the patient, had had an MRI or a CAT scan where they're immersed in a very strong magnetic field, I mean it is super strong, then if they had any sliver or piece of wire, you know, we all had pieces of wire stuck in our skin and so forth, it would be magnetized.
That would rip it right out of your body, though, wouldn't it?
Sometimes, yeah. Sometimes it's so powerful it would.
You've got to be careful with that. Okay, great. Thanks for both of your points. Appreciate it. Next up, Wildcard Line, your turn on Coast to Coast. Hi there. Hello?
Yes.
Go ahead, sir.
This is Don. I'm somewhere east of the Rockies, and I'm driving a truck, and I heard a story from Paul Harvey a couple of weeks ago, and I was wondering, had you heard anything about it? He had mentioned, and I can't remember which country he said it was in, that it had rained red. And they did some tests on it and checked to see if the rain had any kind of like red sand in it that would give it that color. And they determined that it didn't have anything of that nature in it. So they did a test for DNA and found that it had DNA, but it wasn't human or of this earth. Have you heard anything about that?
And if yes, you have, yes, we talked about it last week, as a matter of fact. And they think it had to do with some kind of dust that has come down from the heavens, and that it may have some kind of DNA in there that is not like the DNA that we have on this planet. Also, over Russia, some red residue or something has come filtering down from above, and they can't figure out where that is coming from as well. I think we need to do an update, by the way, on that DNA story. Richard C. Hoagland is listening, and Richard, you need to update us on that because you're the one who talked about it on our program last week. That's an incredible, incredible program. First-time caller line, you're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, George. How are you?
Good.
This is Jerry from Connecticut.
Hi, Jerry. What's going on there?
Not much. Probably about a year and a half ago, my friend called me up, and he sounded scared. And he said something weird happened last night. So he lives right next door. So I told him to come over. And he got here and he rolled up his sleeve and there was a cross scratched into his arm. And at first, I just thought maybe he did it. You know, I don't know why. But he swore to me and he looked like he was going to cry. He swore he didn't do it. And to this day, he says he didn't do it. And so I was trying to calm him down, and I thought maybe he did it in his sleep, like not knowing, but it was a perfectly straight cross, so I don't think there's any way he could have done it in his sleep.
Is he overly religious?
No, not at all.
Hmm. Wonder what kind of message they're trying to send him.
Right.
That is weird.
It is.
And you believe him?
Yeah, I grew up with him, and he just looked so nervous and so scared, and he swore to me.
What's going on now? Is the cross still there on him?
It faded away. You could still kind of see it. But his parents saw it and took him to a psychiatrist. And he came home from there, and he said, you know, I really didn't do this. And I just asked him a few months ago about it, and he really swears that he did not do it.
Well, when you looked at it, when he says he didn't do it and you believe him, of course, but I mean, if he had done it, how would he have done it based on what you saw? What do you think he would have done?
I don't know.
Was it a knife type look or what was it?
It was, yeah, it looks like it could have been done with a knife. It wasn't that deep, but it was just perfectly straight. And he called me up and he just, I've never heard him sound like that before. He was just so nervous.
Huh. Man, I don't know. Part of me would say, I think he cut himself.
Right.
You know, because there's a lot of people are doing that nowadays. I mean, it's a bizarre thing, but
right.
This self-abuse with razor blades and knives, I mean, a lot of people are doing it. Why, I do not know. Thanks for the call. Appreciate it. Let's go to our campfire storyline. Hi there.
Hi, George.
Hello.
Hi, my name is Diane, and I'm calling from Glendale, Arizona, but I have a story about the Cinders in Flagstaff.
Sure.
We're off-roaders, and so we have quads and that sort of thing. We had some family members up there. It was about 2 years ago, Labor Day weekend, and My Aunt Mary, who's like the matriarch of the family, was there with us, and she had her van and some other, like a motorhome and some other family members with us. But we were there on like Sunday night, and most of the people go home because it was a long weekend. And so the rest of us stayed there. And Aunt Mary was there, everything was fine. But all of a sudden, she left about 9 o'clock at night, and my sister and my husband and I and her dogs were left there alone. And all of a sudden, I don't know, the woods got eerie. This was like right after the Blair Witch thing, not long after that. So
they always get eerie then, don't they?
Yes. But it was really strange because after Aunt Mary, the matriarch of the family, left, I don't know, all of a sudden we were kind of spooked and stuff. And that night, the dogs howled and I don't know, we were all just kind of spooked and everything. But that was strange enough as it was. But what was really weird is when I got the pictures developed after the camping trip, it the strangest thing, I have a camera with the panoramic views, and there were all of these faces in the woods in this picture. I mean, people that I could, like, recognize if I saw them again. I mean, the more you look at it, the more faces and strange things you see. And when I saw it after the camping trip, I was like, well, no wonder we were scared. There are all these spooks and ghosts and things in the picture.
Oh, my God. I mean, was it just faces or did they have bodies with them?
Well, no, mostly faces. And like, there was a strange-looking guy with weird eyes and long hair, drugged-out kind of looking guy, and a woman, and another man. I don't know. It's just the strangest thing. I've been going to send this picture to Coast to Coast for the longest
time. I'd love to see this. Were they lined up like it was a class reunion photo?
No, they were just sprinkled.
Kind of
random in the, you know, just kind of in the trees. But they're so specific and so like superimposed on the film. And the way that film is done nowadays, you know, through a major, like a machine, you know, where lots and lots of film go through.
Yeah.
I was wondering if things weren't like, you know, mechanically superimposed on the film, but I've never seen really anything like it.
Do you have the ability to email that picture to me?
You know, I don't tonight because I don't know where the picture is because I used to show it to the family and everybody's like, I don't want to look at that spooky picture again.
All right, but you can once you find it.
I can.
Okay, I'd love to see it. I'll send it up to Lex and Sean, and we'll have them post it. I'll be back in a moment. Open lines continue. What a fast hour. Those of you on hold, don't lose your place in line. Those of you ready to come on board, well, you're going to have to wait until the line opens up. I'm George Norrie, back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM.